Welcome to NetFront Presents. I'm Jeff Gordon of the Post-Dispatch, joined by Tom Timmerman. Matthew DeFranks is, as they say in the business, on assignment, which is a lot of diapers and such. So we're wishing Matt the best. And he'll be back before the draft and free agency and all that, as the NetFront will pick up. But Tom Timmerman was our coverage point person. And man, let's go ahead and start with that. I don't know, man. I mean, that ending of that was crazy. And just kind of take us through what that scene was like in Winnipeg, as this team was so close to going to the Elite Eight.
Yeah, they were. I mean, from a Blues point of view, I mean, just the noise of the frenzy of people in Winnipeg going nuts. They're talking about being alone in the building. I mean, there were, 20 Blues players and however many coaches there are, and not a whole lot of, Blues fans, and just inundated by everything that is Winnipeg, because that place was going nuts. It's very difficult to compare sounds between two, but in a building like Canada Life Center, which is not that big, relatively, everyone's really close, and it just was, they were going nuts. And you look back to those final 30 seconds of regulation there, and you just think that any stick on a puck at any point, changes the outcome of everything. And they couldn't do it. They couldn't get whatever. They just needed one more play somewhere in that time, and it didn't happen. And the players afterwards were just, obviously disconsolate. I mean, Braden Schenn was, who knows when you get a chance like that again. And Colton Parayko was kind of typical Colton Parayko, but Schenn took it hard. And we could see it when we talked to players on Tuesday. It's still hanging with them. It's not going away. But for St. Louis fans, I think it is the flip side of the Cardinals-Rangers World Series. I mean, except they had David Freese, playing for Winnipeg to hit the home run. And, because the Rangers were that close and the Blues were that close to advancing, which for them would have felt close to a World Series the way this season went for them. So, yeah, but that's going to stick with them for a long time. But it was an amazing thing to see. I mean, just you don't see much, happiness by those. I mean, they were pretty darn happy people, the Winnipeg Jets and Winnipeg fans, and the Blues the exact opposite.
Yeah, the Blues, obviously, in 2019 saw the other end of it, that series against Dallas, the Pat Maroon goal, in particular, all the things that could have happened in that game that didn't for Dallas, and the Blues march on. And then at that point, they became on a whole other force of nature, and to win the whole thing. It just came in the balance. There were so many moments in that game that could have gone either way, and they fell the Blues way. And this time, with a push that was starting to look very similar to the 19 push, that just didn't get in game seven, the push. And the feedback you got after the game, or as they thought about the season, and what we heard from folks on Tuesday, they felt they gave everything they could, did everything they wanted to do in terms of their physicality. They put themselves in a position to win, and they were in a position to win, and they just couldn't finish the job. Did so much, checked every box, but the very last one.
Yeah, and it was, and it came down to, Winnipeg pulls the goalie, and that is something the Blues have had a tough time handling this year. And we just saw down the stretch how many times they had a lead late or a tie late and couldn't hold it and didn't get the points that they could have out of it and that were there. And if they get those points at times in the regular season, they're not playing Winnipeg, because they're going to finish ahead of Minnesota. They're playing Las Vegas and Vegas in the first round, or who knows if they, do enough of it, you're competing for, something else. So yeah, I mean, and that is something they have to fix. And it may be the only thing Jim Montgomery didn't fix in his time with the Blues. They were better in everything else, but they still couldn't handle a 6-on-5 against.
Yeah. And, as Doug Armstrong noted on Tuesday, he didn't feel good as the seconds ticked down, because he'd seen that play before. He'd seen that movie before. He saw that ending before. And his team was, for whatever reason, in that scenario, one, when they had a chance to do something, to getting it down the ice under control without icing it, hitting the net with an empty netter, they didn't. And then just their coverage was just collapse. And he just they gave Winnipeg so many spins of the roulette wheel on how many times they threw the puck in the general vicinity of the net. Like you say, legs, sticks, skates. Who knows? Every time that puck goes anywhere there near the net, it's another spin of the roulette wheel. And Winnipeg got a bunch of them, and finally, on a fan shot that went to a prime spot on the ice with just enough time left, that's how it was decided.
It's a truly amazing thing. And yeah, if that puck goes to any number of other places, it doesn't happen. And right now we're previewing a series with the Stars, which would be starting probably Wednesday night in Dallas. But instead, it's everyone pack up your gear and go home. And this can be some level of motivation for next year. You don't want this to happen again, and they'll be better. I can almost guarantee you on 6-on-5s next year. But they accomplished so much. I mean, and this was a situation that no one thought they were going to be in, with the exception of if you listen to the coaches and players and Armstrong tell them that, those people, but the fan base. I mean, you looked at, I mean, on this podcast, how many times did Matt say the Blues have to play 650 hockey, the rest of the way? They have to play at 120 point pace, What were the odds of that happening? I mean, zero. I mean, they hadn't done it in 3 seasons or whatever, and they did it.
Now let's step back, though, and I found it interesting because Doug Armstrong is Doug Armstrong. Okay, so who, of course, he hates to lose. He'll never get over this ever. That ending, he'll never get over it. There's no way, no chance ever. But what was interesting listening to him talk was, he thought, okay, yeah, this was an adventure, but this is exactly who we're supposed to be, and this was the ending. This was the level we were supposed to be at. So that was just he thought the season was not some great accomplishment, but merely meeting what it should have done. And it's interesting because, as you look back, the team, obviously the very first half of the year was not good. They piddled much of the year. They were a 500 team. They changed coaches. It took a while for Jim Montgomery's to move to the new position to take effect. And, Doug Armstrong still thinking about potentially selling off players as the trade deadline neared. Thought about it some more when Colton Parayko got hurt right before the trade deadline. But, he started the year believing in the team, and he made the move that we all thought at the time was crazy. At least I did. Like, why would you go get Cam Fowler? This team isn't going anywhere. That's a move a contender makes. Why would you do that? Well, he went and got him, and Fowler was tremendous. And just one more thing, which helped this team realize what Doug Armstrong thought it could do all along.
Yeah, and you look at the change that has in the defensive unit, that it gives you someone to play alongside Parayko on a top pairing, and it puts other people in proper positions. And Fowler now apparently has fallen in love with St. Louis. And I guess maybe enough time in Anaheim will do that. But yeah, I mean, he loves to wants to stay, will gladly stay. I think the Blues would be, dumb not to re-sign him when a chance arises on July 1st, because yeah, what he did, at the age of 33 on offense and defense, he just made it a better group.
Yeah, so the Blues get this guy. They get Anaheim to pick up, a chunk of the salary. So now he's a highly affordable guy. He's got another year left, and like you say, he's liked it so much that I think he'll sign an extension if the Blues will go there. And his impact was enormous to get the team into the playoffs. And man, he played well in the playoffs. I mean, what an unbelievable postseason this guy had.
Yeah, did he have 10 points? I mean, it's you know it's then that's a pretty good gig right there. So yeah, I think as this defensive unit, and who knows what shape it looks as, it's got to be retooled somehow, because you look and you think Tyler Tucker is now more of a factor in this unit next year. And so how does that change everything around with some of the older guys they have? And so, but he has to figure, Fowler becomes a prime figure in whatever this team's defense looks like going forward.
Yeah, we'll transition and start looking forward a bit with that. The one news that was not surprising from the gathering on Tuesday was that Torrey Krug's unlikely to play again. Torrey's ankle surgery, and Matt wrote extensively about this at the time it happened. The hockey players don't have the surgery. This is the sort of surgery that player, that it helps you get back to having an everyday life, but not perform at a really high level. And as an athlete, it's just you fusing bones together just puts an incredible amount of stress on other parts of the joint, and that stress of trying to skate 100 miles an hour, or at least 22 or 23 miles an hour, it just the ankle's not it's not feasible. And he's just now getting back to where he can pick up his kids and go and do activities without, laboring. So that was a bit of news. And so he'll finish out his career here on returning to long-term injured reserve each of the next 2 years, creating cap space once the year starts. So we know that much. And that's a sad deal because you got to see Torrey in your earlier coverage of the team, and you know what a competitive guy he is.
Yeah, and you look at some of his numbers back from his Boston days, he was one of the best defensemen, all around in the league. I mean, just his contributions of what he did, his WAR numbers were spectacular. And yeah, the Blues had the bad timing, they did not get his prime years, but I mean, he was a guy that in his prime was really, really good. And it was a tough thing for him. Pietrangelo leaves. Okay, you got Torey Krug. He's not Alex Pietrangelo. So that's a tough position. He's a different player, but he was really good. And yeah, I mean, at this point, we've always talked about all those contracts that Armstrong gave to the defensemen and the guys who were all making 6.5 million. And how do they deal with them as these contracts age? Not the way you wanted to have it happen, but this is one of those contracts that everyone thought was not going to age well, and at least it stays on the books, but it won't count against them because of LTIR.
Yeah, this is going to be as Doug starts to look to the future. You just look back on this team, and the way I see it, as you saw the team at the end there, because of young players who are developing, the way Jimmy Snuggerud came in. Unfortunately, Dylan Holloway got hurt. It turns out, he was not coming back. He had to have surgery, and they hope he'll be ready for the start of camp. But the progress of Philip Roberg, who continued to, held up pretty well in the postseason push, and the way Jake Neighbors, I like the way he played in the postseason. He was right in the middle of stuff, and he's developing. And Bol Duke learning through errors, but you can certainly competing and throwing his body around. There's a lot of upside with the guys who got some serious experience with this push at the end of the year, and of course the playoffs.
Yeah, and I mean Snuggerud, you couldn't tell if you didn't know that he was whatever, in his 20, early 20s, that he'd been playing in the NHL for 2 weeks essentially. You wouldn't have known. I mean, he looks like a, I mean, the number of mistakes he made was not big. He looked like he was an NHL player. It's been one of the simplest transitions from college hockey to the NHL we've seen, since Cale Makar, maybe. I mean, it just went. It was like easy for him. It was, and I'm sure it's incredibly hard for him. But just his savvy, his confidence out there, and he looks like an NHL player right from the start.
Yeah, he did have a got a little chit chat during the game seven. It, twice in a row, he tried to make a cross ice pass in the offensive zone that didn't work, but hardly the reason why they lost. But it was an interesting another learning experience. He's like nodding his head, and Monty's like, yeah, And it was interesting that they said as Army was talking about like where Zach Bolduc got to play through mistakes this year. Next year, he'll be held to a higher level. But Jimmy will get a little rope next year. But again, after playing in a structured college game with a high-level program, coming through the developmental program before that, being the son of an NHL player, I'd you know I without needless to say, mature beyond his years.
Yeah, and I say this has been a rough, couple months for him because he was with a Minnesota team that had high goals and went out, relatively early in the NCAA tournament, and then he gets to the NHL and has another brush with, success and advancing, and that's, it's been a lot of dashed hopes for Jimmy Snuggerud amid his quick ascent in the NHL.
Now, a lot of the chatter Tuesday, and it was both Jim Montgomery brought it up, and then doing quick math on the top of his head there, Doug Armstrong did as well, that the team, they're you get better in increments. And so the goal for next year is to be at least 5% better, which would push you up around the 100 point mark and give you, I think, a better chance to go deeper in the playoffs. And that seems like a reasonable goal. I mean, one thing they, I think they've arrived. They're a playoff team now. They're back among the living and among the contenders. And you get in, you can make a run, as they've proven before. But there's an acknowledgement that, this is largely the group we have, and this is the group that's going to have to largely get better from within.
Yeah, it would look that way. With the contract situations, what moves they can make. But as Armstrong knowledge, you have to make some moves. Some things are going to happen, and there are youngsters they need to bring up, and so that's going to mean veterans. What does a Ryan Suter mean? Do going forward here. As the numbers get bigger, 5% gets bigger. So it's easier to make a 5% rise if you're an 80-point team than if you're a 90 or a 95-point team, because that's you're talking about a bigger, those are more points. But yeah, I mean they made the rise this year with what they grew this year. That's a really good step. And as you look at, in past you said you could say, well, the team's getting older, and so are they going to get better? But this team is young enough and has enough young players that are looming there that you can see that there is going to be improvements in Snuggerud and in Bull Duke. Robert Thomas, I think, is still on the ascent, in his career. So now the question is Jordan Kyrou still on the ascent in his career? And that's going to be one of the critical things of what they get out of him.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I mean, I fully expect Robert Thomas to be one of the top, 10 centers in the league. I compare him to a Barkov or an Aho. I think he's at that level. I think he can maybe even notch it up a little more than that. Because Robert Thomas, right? You know his makeup. You've been around him. You know the deal. Jordan, it's a process. And it was a process when he got steamrolled in the playoffs. He got paved. He got to keep playing, right? And his compete level got better this year. At times it needed to be better in the postseason. But this is a guy who scores goals, who can score off the rush, who generates shots, is a sensational talent. It's there, but I think Doug Armstrong put it well, where he said, well, I mean, there's a he can make a little more progress, or he can make a whole lot more progress. And because the talent's there, but how far up that mountain will he go?
Yeah, and the thing I've always come back to, even when Kyrou was first starting out, was he's going to score a lot of goals, and that's the thing. And then the question is, can he make his defensive play without the puck more so to round out his stuff, because he's going to score goals. But if you move on from him, you've got to get a replacement for him, and which becomes A, difficult, and B, expensive. And so how can you do that? How easy is it to say, if you say, we want to trade Kyrou before his no trade clause kicks in. So we do that. But okay, now you got to get another 30, 40 goal scorer somewhere to make up for that. And those guys don't come cheap. And so, I mean, you've got a guy, and that becomes always the balancing act of what do how can you replace him if you move on from him?
Well, and the reality is, the way the salary cap's going to go up, his contract's going to age well, whether he becomes a superstar or just a really good goal scorer. His contract's going to age well. It will at that level. Now, fans are going to keep squawking about him because it's been a process for Jordan. But I think I'm an optimist. I think from talking to people that know him, he takes his stuff seriously. He wants to be good. He's just a different guy. He's a different player. They're not all Brayden Schenn, man. The Schenn brothers are a trip, just like the Sutter brothers were a trip. Some of the other family who's come through the game, everybody's different, man. I don't know what his high end's going to be, but I think his contract's going to age well. And you'd absolutely need that in today's game with the speed of the game, the pace of the game. You need a guy who can do what he does off the rush and create plays up with his passing as well.
Yeah, and you wonder what that second line could have done if you had Dylan Holloway there, as opposed to Jake Neighbors on that line. How that works, and Kyrou only had one 5-on-5 goal in the series, two on the power play, and you would have liked to have seen, considering how many goals they scored, that they would have liked to see more than that. But you're talking 7 games, and who knows if they go to the next round, he could have scored, five in the next round if they got there, but they didn't get there, so we'll never know. But there's always that potential there. And that, he was still high on the team and expected goals and, chances. So Just got to get him to go in.
Well, I mean, but the one even strength goal, that was a missile. That was a rocket. Ripped that thing 3 inches or whatever with the end of the stick. But still, he'll take it, and he'll put that on the resume. Now, it was interesting to hear Doug Armstrong talk about Radek Foxhead going back to there, because again, this team obviously wants to is going to have to keep bringing younger players in. It didn't sound like there's a commitment that Dalibor Dvorsky is expected to make the team to start next year. If he does, great. But it's the expectation is right now that he'll probably need more time. Otto Stenberg, same thing. These could be your second and third center someday, but they may need more time. Seems open to adding another good offensive player to try to get their top nine balanced up, top nine forwards. But boy, Foxa was so good. That line was so good. And he was so valued, this player. It's going to be interesting. He's sort of like, don't, yeah, I think it kind of got like, well, don't do anything without talking to us as far as his future goes, right?
I think his salary though this year was what, 3.5, 3.25.
Pretty good chunk for fourth line.
Yeah, that's going to, I think, be the issue, is how much can you spend on that position on your roster. And if you get a third, you can move Oscar Sundqvist to the fourth line and probably, survive doing that. So yeah, that's going to be a tough one, because yeah, and if the way he played, if someone comes along and offers him two and a half, I mean, is that a number the Blues can match? I don't know, even with the cap going up, if that's something they can do. For good, I mean, well, what are they spending on Toropchenko and Walker? And then it's going to be, it's a tough situation. But it's clear, I mean, the way that line played, that, I mean, they were the most valuable line on that team in the playoffs. I mean, what they did, the goals they scored. I mean, you had six goals out of the fourth line in that series, which is a staggering number. I mean, it's Al Weiss in the 1969 World Series, level performance kind of thing. So it's we're reaching back into the bag.
That's usually my job on this, is to really bring up some dated references. I do that with Derek as well sometimes when I jump in on the Vest podcast. But when you look at the challenge for the where it's gonna hit the road on Fox is if somebody may come along and offer him a second year, and I don't think the Blues can do that, because they definitely feel like those two guys, Dvorsky and Stenberg, will eventually get there. Now, with Dvorsky, fans were wondering, why didn't he join the Black Aces? And it was presumed eventually that, well, yes, he probably the world championships, and that was the case. And as Doug Armstrong noted, he was never going to get in a playoff game for the Blues. That wasn't going to happen. If push came to, if an emergency occurred, Alexandrov was going to go in. They do other things. They didn't want to put the kid in front of one of those steamrollers at this point. But so he gets to go play for his country against men in a good stage, keep his development going. That seems like that made sense.
Yeah, and I'm sure they would have wished to have Springfield have a longer postseason run in the A. But yeah, that's it's always any chance like that, bet when you get to play the best, and maybe the Worlds aren't the best, but it's still pretty good, and a lot of really good guys who just play on non-NHL playoff teams. So this will be a good chance for him to go in there and to not just be playing against his age group, be playing against grown men. And the more grown men you can play against at his age, that'll help his development.
Okay, last thing here on the net front with Tom Timmerman, and again, we will get Matthew back for some of our off-season podcasts down the road. He's very busy at home, taking care of some business, and we're very excited for him. Looking at Nick Leddy, that this is there's going to be some change. He's got a year left on his contract. He loses his full no trade protection. There are other guys who have a couple year, like Falk, I think would. Doug Armstrong talked about feeling good about his top four. Falk, by playing with Broberg, sort of salvaged the year, that pairing at the end of the year. But now Leddy just, kind of a coming back from an injury that wiped him out for most of the year. This is a guy who was a top four defenseman the year before. This is a guy who played matchup assignments, the previous couple of years, which was a stretch for him. But just wasn't the same guy coming back from the injury. And I guess if you're going to circle a guy saying, okay, this is a guy they're probably going to try to move on from, as nice a guy as Nick is, we hate to say it, but he would seem to be a marked man.
Yeah, I'm looking at the final numbers from Game 7, and he played 18 minutes. I mean, Philip Broberg played twice as much time as he did. Colton Parayko, more than twice as much. I mean, he was the low guy on the team among well, sorry, he had 26 seconds more than Ryan Suter did. But yeah, I mean, and that showed that he was not a guy. If you look how much he played in the end of tight games, that pairing was not on the ice. And so, yeah, I think they've got Tucker. Who knows if Matt Kessel is ready to make a step, or if that's a position they have to go out and get someone for. But yeah, I think that's one of the places where you look to see changes on this team. And it's amazing. Yeah, I mean, but we always said for a long time, I mean, that when they were playing Leddy and the penalty kill and in that role, that it was not his shtick. I mean, that was not the kind of, he was out of place on the penalty. He never had to do the penalty kill until the Blues got him, and they didn't have any other option, so he became that. And so you got to salute a guy for stepping in at his point in his career, doing stuff he's totally unfamiliar with. But yeah, that's, I mean, it was clear that in situations there at the end, they were looking at not Nick Leddy.
Yeah, and Ryan Suter, of course, was scratched for a couple of games and his contract expires. He wants to play on after this year, and he did get a shout out from Doug Armstrong. But then again, again, a lot of age on that blue line, and some other guys are locked in. It seems like he'll likely, if he wants to play on, he'll have to be somewhere else, even though he came at a great bargain. Nonetheless, his usage was what it was. And going forward, Tom, Theo Lindstein was a guy that got to play again in Sweden this year, play against men. Seems likely to be in the AHL next season. But this is a guy that could conceivably play some games in the NHL next year. As I think Stenberg will play some games in the NHL. I think Dvorsky will play. So you're going to see some continuation with these high draft picks. I mean, I think Juracek's still young and he's had the injury, and there's a lot of work to be done there because he was such a kid when he was drafted and missed all that time with a knee injury. So there's work to do on the blue line, but again, there'll be some change there, maybe a little change up front, and then take what these guys will mostly just take what they learned and try to do even better.
Yeah, and I think we can't do this without acknowledging Jordan Binnington's play in that series was really good. And in that last game, it was a rematch of the Four Nations final and Hellebuck versus Binnington, and Hellebuck came out on top this time. Jordan Binnington faced 47 shots in that game. I mean, stopped 43 of 47 in the third, fourth, and fifth periods. What, he faced 34 shots in those in the two full periods and the partial overtime. I mean, O stopped 11 shots he faced in the first overtime. I mean, he had a lot of work to do. And to think, well, Hellebuck came out on top. He got, the Jets won, but it wasn't because they, defeated Jordan Binnington. I mean, the goals, so many of the goals that were Winnipeg scored in that series were deflections, tips, puck goes in off, Braden Schenn to start the comeback, and there was just a lot of stuff like that. Binnington had a heck of a series. He had a good postseason run.
Yeah, that goal, that the first goal, the redirection was insane. A redirect that goes up just that tiny little space between the shoulder and the bar on a from a sharp angle redirect that finds its way magically into the net.
Yeah, no one's stopping that one.
Yeah, it's just the life of a goaltender, as Jordan often says. Yeah, you know what? I kind of take him for granted at this point, but if you look at the year he had and the Four Nations success, I mean, getting the all-time wins leader, that was nice for the franchise, but that Four Nations success was huge. His performance in this playoff was huge. His performance down the stretch, Tom, all the way down the stretch was huge. So they know what they have there, and that gives you a tremendous advantage going into next season as well. So great point, Tom. Glad you mentioned it. Just a reminder for all you folks that we will continue to have great coverage in the off season and some additional NetFront presence along the trail as we get closer to some decision making this summer. We want to thank you for supporting local journalism. A reminder that there's so much extra content on our website that you can access through a digital subscription, stuff that our fine print edition does not have. So keep coming back to us. We'll keep giving you good stuff. For Tom Timmerman, who heads back to the soccer beat, I'm Jeff Gordon. For Matt, who's on assignment, we'll see you next time.
You're listening to this podcast, so I know you've got a curious mind. Here's a helpful fact you might not know yet. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save over $900 on average. They make it super simple. Pop over to progressive.com, answer some questions, and you'll get a quick quote with coverage options tailored to your choices. Plus, you'll see which discounts you may qualify for, like the online quote discount or savings for paying in full. In fact, 99% of Progressive auto customers earn at least one discount. See if you could save when you switch to Progressive. You'll feel good about making a savvy choice. Visit progressive.com and see if you can enjoy a little extra cash back. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $946 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2024 and May 2025. Potential savings will vary.